Whoop, whoop.
Good morning, everybody. Whoop, whoop. Happy Tuesday to you. I know we've got a couple of hours at least left in the poll before the 24-hour window expires. How far behind am I, Raj? Am I just getting absolutely boat raced in this deal?
Yes, you are.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Travis. You're getting destroyed.
Oh, no. Not again.
There's still time. There is still time left to vote people. Keyshawn, though, has 48% of the vote, almost half the vote. They really like the way you turn up, Keyshawn. Of course, you go to ESPN Los Angeles Twitter feed and vote on the your favorite day to turn up. So right now, Keyshawn has 48% of the vote, LZ with 36, and Travis 15%. But mathematically, there's still a chance. You're not eliminated. But it looks like Keyshawn's going to tie things up at the top of the leaderboard after this. Congratulations, yeah,
well,
Keyshawn.
Go ahead, give the explanation, LZ.
What do you mean explanation? I actually, if you guys remember, I tried to help Travis yesterday.
No, I mean, give me the explanation.
The funeral pick.
Because when I saw what was originally on the post, which is the best days to have
he
fun.
He did.
I was like, oh, that's not going to help Travis. Because people say best day to have fun, and you got a funeral on there. I was like, oh, no, I ain't going to let y'all do Travis
I think the funeral pick might have hurt you, too, though.
Look, I said it before we even started, that these are my picks. I made it very clear from the beginning. I was not trying to go with the ones that would be most popular with the listeners. I was going with the four that I enjoyed the most. I'm very comfortable. I knew that this would go poorly for me. I knew that I would have a very low total, but I still like my picks very much.
You sound like a beat-down coach. Trying to figure
playoffs.
Out how to survive the rest of the season.
Playoffs? I don't think I'm going to win another snake draft. J.R. Smith is coming in, guys. Yeah, the Lakers are expected to finalize the deal to bring the former teammate of LeBron's to the Lakers. So let's kind of fast forward. Let's assume his health is really good. Let's assume that his conditioning is really good. And let's assume that there's not much rust to knock off at all, that he comes in and he fits in pretty well. Is he going to get big minutes? And I'm not talking volume of minutes. I'm not talking having him play 25, 30 minutes a game. I'm talking of the 10 or 12 or 15 minutes they're going to ask him to do, are a handful of those going to come towards the end of the games? Because we've seen him out there with LeBron in those moments before, and obviously the one big exception aside where he forgot the score of the game, he's been an effective player at the end of those games.
You know, when you look at it, you know, you say to yourself, does this make all the sense in the world? Yes, it does, because there's no Avery Bradley, right? But does it make sense to a point where you could depend on a 34-year-old who hadn't played in 2 years, who shot 30% from the arc the last time, the deep arc, the last time he was on a team? Does it make sense for that and what you're asking him to do? And I know LZ had a point earlier in the show about, you know, when LeBron leaves, LeBron takes the basketball with him, and now you have to figure out how to do things on your own. Well, I make the point, being a professional shooter myself from the arc, that no matter where I touch the ball,
which arc?
Deep.
That little dotted line underneath the hoop.
Deep,
okay.
Deep. When I touch the ball. But when you're a pure shooter and you that is what you do, it doesn't matter when you touch it. If you touch it the last 2 seconds, that thing comes off that wrist so hot, you should be able to knock it down. I mean, I'll say this for argument's sake. That shot at the end of the game and Ray Allen in the championship, how many seconds did he touch the ball? They gave it a bam, hot potato, boom, gone. So my point is, it doesn't matter when you get it if you're supposed to be a shooter. You're supposed to be making it.
Well, listen, you just compared J.R. Smith to one of the greatest shooters to ever play the game.
No. That's not what I compared him to. I'm comparing him to just shooting the basketball, because that is what you're supposed to be doing. That's all I'm saying. When you're a guy – that your bread and butter is shooting, you're signing because you're knocking down stuff, I shouldn't have to give you the ball with 15 seconds to go. I should be able to just give it to you with 2 seconds, and you're supposed to have it come out of that wrist. That's all I'm saying.
Let's take a listen to Woj, who was on with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter, and him describing what he expects J.R. Smith's role with the team to be.
While he's taking Avery Bradley's spot on the Lakers roster, he's not taking Avery Bradley's spot on the court. And there's some other Laker guard depth, Alex Caruso, KCP, Deion Waiters, who was just signed prior to the league shutdown, who are going to play a much bigger role but there's not a lot available out in the marketplace. There's not players who teams feel can really come in and make a dramatic difference. So J.R. Smith is a player that they'll sign, that they'll take to Orlando with them. And if there's injuries, if there's COVID-19 positive tests, they know they have a player who has done it in the past. Can he still do it having been out of the league for almost 2 years?
That sounds more like he's just going to be a depth guy in the, you know, break glass in the, and if you need him.
And that's okay. And that's fine, Trav. That's fine. There's no arguing that you need bodies, but this notion that he's going to come in and, you know, that 10, 15 minutes, he should be able to put up shots. He hadn't played in 2 years, basically. But the good thing about not playing in 2 years, the league hasn't played in over 3 months. So, And it'll be close to 4 months when they get back to finally getting going again. That means the rest of the league has probably come back to something close to where he would be. Now, I'm not saying he's completely out of shape or they're going to be out of shape, but at least there's some sort of even playing ground when it starts back up.
Listen, as Woj just said, exactly what I've been saying this whole time. We're not asking him to carry anything. We're not asking him to start. We're not asking him to lock down anybody. We're saying when you're on the floor, stand in that corner, which is where he's deadly from, and keep the floor spread. You know, whether – now, Woj suggested, you know, if there was an injury or COVID, and, you know, that too obviously is a situation that you would want to have. But I would also argue that if things aren't clicking the way you want them to offensively because the guys who are currently in the corner are knocking that shot down, don't be surprised if you see them use JR in that corner.
So let me ask you this.
Just to see if he's hot.
Let me ask you this, Coach. Is can he be Kyle Korver or J.R. Redick?
You mean J.J. Redick?
I mean J.J. Redick. Why did I say J.R.? J.J. Redick. Can he do that?
What I wouldn't want to do is – see, those two guys, they have plays run for them so they can get an open shot. They come off of multiple screens. They're constantly moving. And then they get the space. So the play is drawn up for them specifically to get that shot. I don't want JR being used in that way. What I want to see happen is that when they're doing the two-man game with LeBron and AD up top, that he's in that corner so that when AD gets that ball because he's rolling to the rim and that man on the baseline slides over, he gets punished because JR Smith is right there. He can catch and shoot. If you notice, Danny Green gets that shot a lot.
And has not been making it, exactly.
Avery Bradley has gotten that shot quite a bit. Sometimes Alex Caruso would take that shot, though I feel Alex is much more efficient, more along the top part of the arc, not necessarily on the sides that I'm talking about, those corner threes. But that shot's going to be available in this screen, high screen and roll situation when AD rolls to the bucket. And do you have someone there that they have to respect? Do you have someone there that will punish them if they don't respect? And JR can do that.
Well, you know, the other part, then you touched on it briefly, LZ, and you heard Woj mentioned it right there, is he could be a depth guy in the case of a virus outbreak. This is when you hear it like that, just dropped into the middle of another thought like that, is when it just kind of hits you right across the face that we could be looking at a situation where they go into the bubble, the season starts, they play those 8 games, you get into the playoffs, and maybe you're towards the end of the first round, you're into the second round. And all of a sudden, an important player, never mind if it's LeBron James or Anthony Davis, that's on a whole nother level. If somebody like that, or Giannis or Kawhi or somebody like that goes down. But all of a sudden, J.R. Smith, instead of just being that guy who's there to knock down a shot occasionally, and like you've described, but now all of a sudden, you need to use him in big minutes because there's this variable that has never existed before, which is, you know, we saw it last year with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. Guys get hurt occasionally, okay? And that's just part of sports and it happens. But this is a different deal where you could have a positive virus test and you could lose half your team like that. And all of a sudden you're playing with your B guys instead of your A guys. And it's not just the Lakers. Everybody could find themselves in this situation. And instead of having to ask a guy to play, you know, 10 or 12 or 15 minutes and knock down some corner threes along the way, you could potentially be asking Dion Waiters and J.R. Smith to play many, many more minutes than that, in big minutes than that, to get you to the end of the line so the 2 weeks can expire on a quarantine. There's just this other variable out there that's never existed before, and it's almost certainly going to happen.
Yeah, you know, it's a strange world you live in, Travis, when you are depending upon J.R. Smith to be the breaking case of emergency guy. Because he has the emergency, he has the, you know, the reputation, plenty of incidents that makes you want to raise your eyebrow. But in the event that something unfortunate happens, he, you know, theoretically is that guy. And the truth is that there probably isn't a team in the league that doesn't have one of those guys that you may look at and go, huh, are you going to do all the things we need you to do in a responsible fashion in this dynamic? So I don't even think it's unique in that case. And who knows? Maybe the absence from the game has changed some things for him. Maybe more maturation. You know, we bring up his age. Maybe that's changed some things for him. Maybe he's just grateful to be back in the league and has a chance to win another chip with LeBron. Who knows? But that element of, you know, the coronavirus impact on this experiment that the NBA is trying and how you have to be relied upon a lot of people that you may not necessarily want to be relied upon in regular situations, that's going to be a nice little wrinkle to see what happens.
I mean, Key, imagine going into the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl or something like that, and all of a sudden a guy who was on your taxi squad is now starting. I mean, that would be unbelievable, and that's what we're talking about. Well, maybe he's not a taxi squad player, you know, in the most traditional sense, but a guy that was not really a part of your plan is now not only a part of your plan, but an important part of your plan. Doesn't happen very often.
We had that happen in the AFC Championship game, where all of a sudden Dave Meggett became an important part of our plan, who wasn't there for quite some time, but we picked him up. I want to say we picked him up with about – 3 games left in a season or something?
How'd he do?
Bonk, bonk.
Well, hopefully this goes a little different. Hopefully J.R. Smith does not have the Dave Meggett path. Josina Anderson will join us next. We'll talk about Cam headed to New England. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, we are joined right now by an Emmy Award winner, an NABJ Award winner, Josina Anderson, Friend of the Show Award winner, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Josina, good morning. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Morning, JoJo.
Congratulations,
girl, on the Kaepernick doc. That is fantastic news.
Yeah, girl.
What'd you say? On the what?
Kaepernick.
LZ.
On the Kaepernick what? What did I do?
Documentary.
Kaepernick documentary? I'm not in no Kaepernick doc. Am I?
Yeah, I saw it was posted. Your name was attached to it. Was that not you? Did someone do an oopsie-doo?
Ava DuVernay is doing a documentary with another writer who is a part of the series That's How They See Us or whatever it's called. And it's a dramatization of the early life of Colin Kaepernick. So you talking about that.
But go on and take the credit anyway, JoJo. Go on and take the credit because we obviously made a mistake.
It's okay.
And
it's my bad, girl. It's my bad, girl.
Okay, what did I do?
Somebody, it was misreported that you were involved with helping to write the piece. So I was giving you some shine, but I was wrong.
I didn't even see that.
Bad. Yeah, you know.
I didn't even see that. But listen, I'll take free compliments and extra compliments, ones I don't even deserve, so that's fine.
Why not, right?
That's fine. So what's going on, y'all?
Well, we want you to tell us about this Cam Newton situation in New England. What you think about it? You think about Cam Newton could get back to form, get things done, where people will stop saying that he's banged up, injured, and he's not a quarterback of the future anymore?
Well, this is the team that I said from the get-go I felt like was the best fit for him when I was surveying the land of the teams that, you know, could add competition to their quarterback depth and the quarterbacks that were out there at the time. And that included Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, Cam Newton. And I just felt like given everything that Cam has gone through in Carolina, you know, where his emotional state is, personality, and certain things like that. I felt like the way the Patriots run their ship would probably be most beneficial to him. And the way that I know Josh McDaniels relates to his quarterbacks and that one-on-one rapport, I just thought he would thrive in that. obviously we know that Cam Newton is a former MVP. He's gone to the Super Bowl in 2015. But I also feel like, you know, some of the things that he's gone through with the way things ended in Carolina, you know, has been obviously very, you know, hurtful. He's also endured a lot of injuries. I know people have been talking about, oh, he's 0-8 in his last starts. Clearly he's dealing with, you know, the foot injury and the shoulder before that. And I think that when you look at Jarrett Stidham not starting, and you look at Hoyer, who obviously his resume doesn't compare to that of Cam, I feel there's no question that Cam should end up as the starter, which is what I tweeted. I don't necessarily say and can say that he will definitely start off the season as a starter. Would not be surprised if Belichick puts him through, you know, some type of, you know, you need to assimilate more into the New England ways. Okay, you know, he's not up to speed where we want him with the playbook, simply because it's July right now, or almost July at the time that he's, you know, agreeing to this contract. But, you know, when the games are on the line, assuming that Cam, you know, stays healthy and nothing is breaking down on him physically, that's where I expect the situation to be.
Jacina, what happened? You talked about a little bit about his relationship and emotional state in Carolina. What happened to him as the leader of that franchise? Because on the outside looking in, the send-off just seems as if it was more of a diss than it was a proper send-off to someone who was probably the best player in your franchise's history.
That's a good question. I think what happened was, remember, you have new ownership in David Tepper, and you also have, you know, a new head coach. And I think that they evaluated the situation with Cam and where he was with his injury. And I think they evaluated where they're trying to take this offense. And whatever were their private conversations, they made a determination that Cam didn't fit. And from Cam's perspective, when you're looking at the relationship that he developed with Ron Rivera, and then you're looking at everything that he accomplished for that team as the quarterback, taking it all the way to the Super Bowl, and then when you are looking at historically what has been his offensive weapons over that period of time, and lastly, how he has given his body up, you know, to help propel that offense, he probably feels, and we can discuss whether you feel like he should feel like that, but my guess is that he feels like he deserves better in terms of patience to wait for him to get to where he needs to be from a health standpoint, and more respect from the new regime and ownership and being a head coach. And clearly they made a determination, even after all of that, they prefer to be with Teddy Bridgewater. So you have to ask yourself, if that was you, either any of you, the three of you, you know, how would you feel?
Jacina Anderson joining us here on The Morning Show. Jacina, obviously it's a one-year deal. It's incentive laden. Any idea on how both sides are looking at this as an opportunity to maybe establish something long-term, or is this just an opportunity from Cam's side, at least, to go in there, show the rest of the league, hey, I'm healthy, I'm still Cam Newton, and go back into free agency and get real money that quarterbacks typically do?
Well, on one hand, you know, the Teddy Bridgewater example in New Orleans is a great example for quarterbacks in this situation, where you can go in, hope that you get an opportunity. Obviously, no one wants to see another quarterback injured in this case. What would be analogous is, you know, Drew Brees getting injured and Teddy Bridgewater doing really well and being able to leverage that and monetize that to the contract that he got from Carolina. So on one hand, that's what you want to happen. On another hand, you have an opportunity to prove yourself. And you can tell by the post that Cam was putting on Instagram, you know, working out initially by himself, you know, the spiritual post, and then lastly ending up working with OBJ. I mean, you can tell that he's, you know, seething and that he is, you know, anxious and, you know, feeling disrespected, all those things that you don't have to be beside a man to feel. You can feel it coming through the post, right? On the other hand, and this is the third piece, and I think this is what Richard Sherman was getting at when he tweeted that he felt like the contract was ridiculous. And I believe based on what I reported. I didn't go look it up, but I'm assuming that what people have reported is correct, that it's up to, you know, 7.5 million. That, you know, there's an economic piece where, like, wow, you know, look at a quarterback of his resume and the fact that, you know, a team like the Patriots can sit back and listen, no whatever to the Patriots. It's business to a certain extent, right? But can sit back and, you know, wait for the landscape to be what it is and then come in and give a contract like that. And then, you know, basically Cam is forced to take it if he wants to play because we're running out of time. And so, you know, that's difficult. So I think, you know, Cam would like to, you know, obviously prove himself, benefit from the situation and the coaching, and they'll see, you know, where it goes. I mean, you have quarterbacks that obviously are approaching their 40s that are still playing. So theoretically, if it does work, they should be able to consider Cam more long-term than just the one, you know, term deal. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, the one thing I can say is that I want Cam to have the same energy with his clothing behind the podium. I don't want him to change.
Well, it certainly would be fun.
I want him to have that same energy. Don't change in New or you know, in New England. Have the same silk scarf around your head at the end of the game.
I don't think, you know, the one thing that I surely could say about the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick and guys that are there in that organization, they don't try to change players. Whether it was Corey Dillon, Randy Moss, any of the guys that have come there off the streets as free agents with high personalities, Chad Johnson, they all stayed the same. They all were – the difference is it's the access to the media. There's just not free fall. They just don't allow people to just – approach their players. They give, you know, Josina and LZ, they give you a limited window. You get what you can get right then and there, and that's it. Everybody every single day is not available to the players. When you look at the state of the NFL right now, Josina, and where things are at heading into the start of the season, do you think we'll get some pushback to the month of, let's say, the beginning of October based on the pandemic, or will we start on time?
Good question. And just to answer real quick to what you said with all those players, I feel like you mentioned in New England, none of them were quarterbacks. And I would be curious if he feels pressure to change his dress, not just his personality. But as far as what you were saying with the pandemic, I mean, quite frankly, if I'm going to get, you know, really specific, I think that it's going to be a little bit more precarious in states that have governors, quite frankly, who, you know, are a different political persuasion of, you know, what's in the White House. And the reason why I say that is because I think that they'll be more apt to potentially, you know, close down bigger gatherings, whether it be at a stadium or what have you, regardless of the NFL putting out protocols and guidelines with regards to how they're going to handle the pandemic. And also, regardless of Jeff Pass, which is the NFL's legal counsel, saying last Thursday that he believes, and it also came out yesterday, that they believe that training camp will start on time. You still have to have conversations with the players and the executive committee of the NFLPA. And quite frankly, you know, the local leadership of every state is going to have the final say as to, you know, what is going on. I mean, anybody watching CNN right now, I think the last map that I saw only had two states in green that are going in the opposite direction in terms of surges with the pandemic right now. I mean, if you're looking at that, that's going in the complete opposite direction. And it's just like what Richard Sherman said to me. You cannot play football in social distance. Those two things do not go together. And so what my concern is even if they have daily testing, if you have contracted COVID and it's day zero, I mean, you could potentially go all the way up to day eight or whatever. Just pick a number, but let's just say for the sake of this conversation, it's day eight. And potentially still produce a false negative. And so if all that week you're in, meetings with the wide receivers or the offensive linemen or what have you, I mean, who would know? And you don't want a extreme outcome where during max activity, which that would be, you know, a game day, where something severe happens with a respiratory virus while they're playing football. I mean, most of these people that obviously have COVID are not playing football at that max level on a Sunday. and whether they know that they have it or not. And we haven't really seen that, you know. So the last thing that the NFL wants is some extreme case to really just, you know, tip the perception of all of this in the public eye. And, you know, I think the comments from Malcolm Jenkins are very interesting, whether where he was saying he doesn't think that football players are essential workers. And, you know, he's very concerned about, you know, play starting on time. And if you're just looking at the maps with everything, it is concerning. You only need one super spreader. You only need one patient zero to cause a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a bubble where I don't know that you can really contain that.
Justina Anderson joining us here on The Morning Show. Justina, always good to talk with you. Thanks so much for your time.
All right, JoJo. Next time, we're going to get it right with the Kaepernick
thing. Yes, and I really appreciate leaving this conversation knowing that I'm a movie director now. So thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Because you're a shining star, baby. It's your shining star, so we just assume.
I'm taking it all, LZ. I'll take it all, baby. Add to my credits. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Justina.
Okay.
All right, y'all take it easy.
You too. 10 years ago today, guys, something happened that I guarantee you you're going to remember. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Ilzy, I don't know if this is going to make you feel the way you felt when I told you that Purple Rain dropped 36 years ago, the way that I told you last week. But 10 years have gone by since LeBron James had the decision on ESPN. We all remember the decision where he went on TV, live TV interview, where he decided that he was going to go to play for the Miami Heat. You know, famously, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach. And LeBron got absolutely destroyed from it. And it's interesting, with the benefit of 10 years of hindsight, to look at this. And I'll start with myself here. I couldn't have been more wrong in my reaction to it at the time. And shortly after it happened, it kind of fades and you realize, okay, it really wasn't that big of a deal. But it really is a landmark piece of television that 10 years later, we're still talking about it. We still remember where we were when we saw it. We still remember what he was wearing, what he said. Everything about it was incredibly memorable. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he raised a bunch of money for a bunch of kids and put a bunch of equipment inside some schools. But at the time, he got absolutely torched for doing it.
I'll still not understand why that is, though. It's just hate, jealousy, that I'm doing it my own way 10 years ago, not the way y'all want me to do it. Because even 10 years ago, and obviously professional sports to high school sports are totally different, but what's the difference outside of that, that guys in high school, when they're excited about doing something, they sit there with the hats, they play with the hats, they make a decision, and they make the decision. I understand it's LeBron James, I understand it's professional sports, but it's the same thing. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying this moment. Why? I didn't tell y'all to anticipate and go all in 100% on where I would wind up going if you're a fan of this city or this team. You know, and so I still don't understand why such the jealousy and the hate on how I did it the way I wanted to do it.
You know, there are two aspects of this conversation, Key, and you're absolutely right about that, about the jealousy and the hate. But I will also add in the short-sightedness that has been corrected, but was certainly short-sighted 10 years ago, which is, here you had LeBron, Wade, and Bosh taking control of their careers. And I've said this once, and I'll say it again. If Pat Riley had orchestrated a trade and put those three guys together, he would have been hailed as a genius, a brilliant GM, you know, the best team president in the history of the game. Oh, my God, I can't believe he did it. But because the three gentlemen decided to do it themselves, they're seen as cowards. And it is like the most ridiculous, like, way to view what was happening, because they were still, they being a lot of NBA fans, both brothers in the hood as well as, you know, gym rats and rural USA. They still had this mentality that the business of basketball had abandoned a long time ago, which is one superstar, one franchise, you stay there until the end, and then you say goodbye, and we give you a send-off. Like, that mentality wasn't reflective of what the league had actually become up until that point. Superstars were already being moved around. You know, the big three in Boston was put together by Danny Ainge after Kevin Garnett agreed to have his no-trade clause waived. That's putting the team together. just because Danny Ainge's name is on there, but LeBron James got so much hate for it.
Well, because he did it. He did it his way, LZ. Well, he didn't need a general manager to do it. He did it his way. He didn't need the general manager to trade for him. He did it his way. And whenever you are ahead of the curve on anything, people don't like it.
Well,
I
mean,
I go back to my own career, and I look way back. When I did it my way, it was always hate. It was me, Sean. It was this. No, I'm going to do it my damn way. And at the end of the day, if it burn up, then I burned it. I'm not going to allow you to burn it.
No, it was new. To your point, LZ, that we've seen executives put together teams for a long time, and it was, oh, this is their job. It's the executive's job to put together a team. It's the executive's job to identify a star and another team that's unhappy that wants out and bring him over to my team. And that's just kind of the way that we expected the NBA and really professional sports to be run. This was new, where the players decided, hey, what do we want to do? Okay, we want to go over here. All right, let's go over there. We weren't quite sure how to deal with it. We weren't quite sure what this meant. And so the reaction from a lot of people, my hands in the air right now, I'll admit it, I got it wrong, was, oh, this is cowardly. This is selfish. This is look at me stuff. This is, I can't win in Cleveland with what I have the way that Magic Johnson won and Larry Bird won. Again, it was wrong, but I'm going to go join Dwayne Wade, who already has one. I'm going to take the easy way out. I'm going to go join over here. It was just totally brand new at the time to see it be that out front, that open, that transparent, and have the best player in the league say, yeah, I'm going to go over here with this guy because he's really good. I'm going to bring this other guy in from Toronto because he's really good. And we're going to go kill it down here for a number of years. Turns out they go to the finals 4 years in a row. They win two of them. We just hadn't seen it, and we didn't know how to process it. He, like so many other things he does on the court, he was just way ahead of the curve for the rest of us. He just had it figured out long before the rest of us. And now you look at what's going on. This is how almost the entire NBA operates. It's the players who call the shots, not the general managers, not the team presidents or the owners. It's the players who do it. And LeBron kicked it off 10 years ago with the decision.
Yeah, when you have that power and you're a star of power, you empower yourself, but you also empower others that follow you. And he's been able to do that. And again, it's like anything, that general managers are not calling the shots. They're there. They're helping along the way. But at the end of the day, it was his decision. It wasn't anybody else's decision to do that. And so, you know, people just the hate, the jealousy. That's what it is, man. You ain't going to never, no matter what, you're not going to satisfy people, everybody all the time. It's just, I learned that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Everybody ain't going to be happy with you, period.
No, they're not. And Travis, I'm going to toot my own horn here. I saw it right away. I didn't need time to process it. I didn't need any of that. Because when you're a basketball player and the president of the United States is lobbying for you to join his hometown team, you that dude. You know what I'm saying? You're that dude. We have to remember, this was a summer in which teams were falling all over themselves. Celebrities were on Instagram on Twitter and Facebook lobbying for LeBron to come to their teams. And then President Obama was like, we really want you to be a Chicago Bull. LeBron James did not create the environment in which the decision came through in. The environment was created around him, and the decision was his response to the interest of his decision that was being made. And I never once bought into this idea that he had to run to Miami and join Dwayne Wade. Never bought into that. Even though Wade had already won a championship ahead of time, I also knew he wasn't coming to a made team. I also knew that after winning that championship, the Miami Heat were no longer a championship contending squad. Also knew that he wasn't joining a team that already had a whole bunch of superstars and he was just parachuting in to ride coattails. He joined that team and then became MVP of the league again. He joined that team and led that team to the finals. Yes, Dwayne Wade had a finals MVP. He was his running mate when he got to that squad. So that whole notion that LeBron was a coward or that he was afraid or he was short-sighted, I never bought into it. I saw what was happening in real time, and I'm really happy 10 years later, people are now reconsidering their stance on it.
You were in an extreme minority. That was a very unusual point of view at the time, and most of the other people were on the other way. You were right, and you are right. That 10 years later, I think most people feel very differently about it. Take it or shake it. is coming up next. All right, Key, we're going to start in the NFL. We're going to start with Cam Newton. I want you to listen to Adam Schefter, who said that Cam Newton being in New England, it's a simple explanation. No other offers.
There was not a lot of contact between the Patriots and Cam Newton until just recently, over the last couple of weeks or so. And there were no other teams that were lighting up Cam Newton's phone. No other offers coming in. The only offer he had was from the New England Patriots on a one-year deal that I think both sides were in favor of, because Cam Newton knew that when the Panthers released him a couple of weeks into free agency, the big money had filled up or dried out, the starting jobs had gone away, and so he needed to go to a place to put himself in the best position to make a mark this year, so that when he gets to the free agent market, if he gets to the free agent market in the offseason of 2021, that he's in the best position to capitalize on it then. So he invested in himself. He chose a low-paying deal from the Patriots. He gets to try to replace Tom Brady. And if he succeeds there, then he'll be a big ticket free agent item once again after this season.
Cam Newton is in New England because he had no other options. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, shake it.
You know what I mean?
I think Cam Newton would have had options, but I think this was his best situation. It made the most sense. I love when people say the phone wasn't ringing. Well, we don't know if the phone was going to ring or not. We have no idea. I don't care what people say. I understand. I respect Adam with the utmost respect. He gets all the greatest information in terms of reporting and analytics or analysts across the board. But at the same time, I know how this stuff goes. Okay, a guy is kicking the tires on this or that, and at the end of the day, it made sense for Cam Newton to sign with the New England Patriots. Why wouldn't he? Why would I want to go to a franchise that can't get out of his own way? Why would I ever want to do that?
Yeah, there's not a ton of vacancies out there for him. Like you said, there's no money. That's the one place that lined up, and that's the one place that he ended up. All right,
all
let's go to the next one.
All it takes is one.
Yeah, and everybody. Look, this could be a home run for him. He could go in there and play great. The Patriots could make a run, and there's going to be a line at his door of people that want to pay him.
Well, listen, I think that Cam Newton probably is in this position for a lot of reasons. There weren't a lot of starting positions available. The money wasn't there. Questions about his health. And then questions about whether or not you just want to bring his Camness to your franchise. But at the end of the day, I think he landed in a perfect spot. He's with a team with a winning mentality, with a coach with a winning mentality, with a great defense, and they need a starting QB. So it might have been a rocky road, but he landed in the right place.
All right, let's go to the NBA. We now know that in the bubble, in the Orlando bubble, the three courts that they're going to use are going to have Black Lives Matter painted on the courts. When we go back into the regular NBA arenas, every court should have Black Lives Matter painted on it. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it. Shake it.
He doesn't think we matter. He doesn't think we matter.
All lives matter. All lives matter.
Stop, man, because y'all going to get me to laughing. I don't think that you need to do that. I think what you need to do is continue to send a message however you deem to send it as a franchise and a fan base. It doesn't have to be on the floor. It could be a logo. It could be banners in the ceilings. It could be messages on the tickets. Whatever you need to do to continue to push the message, that's what you do. Whatever it is, as long as it's visible and people see it.
Well, why not have Black Lives Matter painted on the court? It doesn't have to be down the center of the court. It could just be along the
side.
Okay,
you're smart. You're a professor.
You said shake it.
I did not say
you said
that
shake
they
it.
Should eliminate Black Lives Matter, fool.
That's what shake it means.
I said they don't have to have it on the court, but they need it somewhere so it's visible and the message is being pushed. Now, you're smart enough to not challenge me because you're going to lose every time, Elsie.
You said shake it.
You said my life didn't matter to me. You said I'll be better when I'm in
Orlando. You know, sometimes I want to scream that though, Raj. All lives matter, you know, because when people get to looking at you, I got a good story. I'm going to have to tell you during the break, though.
Ooh, all right.
Can't wait. Coming up next. Okay, let's go back to what we were talking about a second ago. The decision will always be troublesome for some LeBron fans. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
100%. Because you can't please everybody. There's people that still to this day, and LZ knows this. LZ's on radio. He's on platforms. He's an openly gay black man. That's a sports reporter, a professor, a germ spreader, everything, right? There's people that don't like that. They mad at that. They don't understand that. But and it's going to be that way. It ain't going away. Same thing with LeBron. There's people that don't like that he has the control of his own life. They don't like it. They mad at it. Oh, he should have never done that. He should have never did that. Oh, he only put a team together to win a championship. Look, see, he's not even great. The Lakers, they're terrible right now. You got to have people that do that because they have nothing else better to do in their life.
Well, it's a tell, right? It's a very clear tell that if the thing that you're going to seize on about why you don't like this man is that 10 years ago he went on TV to announce where he was going to play basketball next, if that's your objection to him, I got nothing for you. If that's what you're going to be, is that the reason that, oh, LeBron's a bad guy or he's selfish or all these other things? It's like, come on, man.
You got
that. That is your complaint about something from 10 years ago that wasn't a big deal at all? That's
but
your
think
complaint?
About it, though. Okay. Think about it. It happens to everybody, though, Travis, right? Guess what? Michael Jordan was too hard on his teammates. He's a blankety blankety blank. Kobe Bryant was too hard on his teammates. He was selfish. Blankety blankety blank. Keyshawn, all he wanted was the damn ball. Blankety blankety blank. And you're going to get it if you allow. And I tell people all the time. I say, man, if I worry about everything that everybody think about me or said about me, then I wouldn't even be in the position that I'm in today, man. If I set up and I really truly worried about what the hell you think about the way I live my life and how I move around, I'd be in trouble. I would be in seriously trouble.
All right, let's go to the next one here. We're getting closer to players heading inside the bubble in the NBA. The bubble will be far more challenging psychologically than physically. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Whoa, take it.
Oh, it's going to be hard on the brain. Strain.
The bubble.
The bubble, man. You know, they're going to get that itch. You know how LZ.
Absolutely.
Travis, you know how LZ and you get that itch when the sticky, icky, icky. You know, the gummy. and that's what it's going to be like for them. They're going to have that itch. They're going to be trying to figure out how. They're going to be scheming. They're going to want to know if they can dig a tunnel through the ground. They're going to be itching.
Like El Chapo.
They're going to be like, ooh, can I dig a tunnel? Can we get out? They're going to be trying to pay the security guards out. All that. They gonna it's gonna be one of those deals because realistically, eating inside of a bubble is cool because you're gonna get a certain food. But then at the same time, they're gonna want to go and smell some good food because you know at hotels and them training, if they ain't really putting it down, they're gonna give you that bland. They're gonna give you that pasta. They ain't got no. They're gonna give you sauce pasta rolled together with some cheese on top. They're gonna give you stuff like that. They're gonna give you a piece of salmon ain't got no seasoning. A steak that wasn't barbecued, but yet was grilled on a griddle.
That's what
they're going to give you.
What they really need is to put a strip club in a bubble. Get all the dancers tested for coronavirus.
Now you stereotyping professional athletes and basketball players.
All right, let's wrap.
If that's all they do.
There's another element to it as well. We'll come back to that. We'll talk about the psychological impacts of the bubble because they're real. Just being isolated, even if you're isolated with other people, that is a real challenge. But coming up next, Adam Kennedy, friend of the show, will tell us what the relaunch of the 60-game season might look like. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.